KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. This is Speakers Forum. 10 years ago, Dave Isay began StoryCorps by building a soundproof booth in Grand Central Terminal. People arrived in pairs to interview each other about their lives. Today, StoryCorps airs pieces weekly on NPR, and more than 30,000 interviews have been recorded and archived in the Library of Congress. Isay has also compiled some of the stories into books. His most recent is called Ties That Bind: Stories of Love and Gratitude from the First 10 Years of StoryCorps. He spoke at the Elliott Bay Book Company on December 17th, 2013.
Hi, thank you so much for coming out. I really appreciate it. It's great to be here. And I don't even think, I don't need a mic, right? Everybody can hear me. Yeah. So let me just start by asking, who here has heard StoryCorps on KOW, on the radio, or any public radio station? Okay. Anybody here have participated in StoryCorps? Great. Anybody else? And anybody here not know what StoryCorps is, and why did they show up at the last reading of the year? Hey, the honest man in the back. Thank you for coming. So StoryCorps is a very simple idea. We started almost exactly 10 years ago. We're now celebrating our 10th anniversary. We set up a booth in, I used to be a public radio producer for many years, making documentaries, and had this kind of crazy idea 10 years ago to set up this booth in Grand Central Terminal in New York City. And the idea is you can bring anyone who you want to honor by listening to their story to this booth. It could be a friend, a grandparent, whoever it is. You come to this booth, you're met by a facilitator who works for StoryCorps, who brings you inside the booth, and then you sit across from, say, your grandmother for 40 minutes and talk. And the StoryCorps method is kind of a way to distill someone's life as best that's possible in 40 minutes. They're often very intense conversations. At the end of 40 minutes, two CDs have been burned. One goes home with you, and the other stays with us and goes to the Library of Congress. So someday your great-great-great-great-grandkids will get to know your grandmother through her voice and story. And, of course, excerpts are played on public radio stations, and we have books, and we have animations. We've now done, in 10 years, about more than 50,000 interviews with about 90,000 participants. It's the largest collection, single collection of human voices ever gathered. We've recorded all over the country in 50 states, 1,700 cities. And I think, you know, what we're trying to do with this, we are a public service organization. And the public service we offer is giving people the chance to have these conversations. And I think that the power of these story conversations is that one, it's about listening in this age where we're so kind of distracted, and it's you turn your computers off and your cell phones off, and you sit with another human being and look them in the eyes and say, who are you? What have you learned in life? How do you want to be remembered? And in doing so, you tell them that they matter and they won't be forgotten. We hold about half of our slots at StoryCorps, exactly half of our slots, for people who might not have heard of us through newspapers or public radio. So we work with about 500 nonprofits each year so that they can have their clients come to StoryCorps and also recognize how much their stories and lives matter by having these conversations. So it might be a homeless service organization or a juvenile justice organization or an immigrants organization. And I had come to believe when I used to do documentaries that people who feel like their stories aren't heard, their voices aren't heard, who feel like their lives may not matter, that the act of being interviewed and being listened to in this way can have a particularly powerful impact on their lives and can sometimes be transformative for them. And then with these stories, and I'm going to play some of them, most of you have heard these stories on NPR, the power of these, I hope, is that when you hear one of these stories, you're going to be walking in the footsteps just for an instant or read one of these stories of someone who you might have thought was very different than you. And by definition, they probably are very different than you in terms of geography and where they come from. But hopefully when you listen to that story, you're going to hear a little bit of yourself in the story of someone who you might have thought was very different and recognize all those things that everybody in this room believes in, or else you wouldn't be here. The fact that there's probably a lot more that we share in common than divides us, that if we spent more time listening to each other and less time screaming at each other, we'd be a better and stronger country. So for our 10th anniversary book, Ties That Bind, we kind of wanted to get to the core of what StoryCorps is about. And this is a book about people interviewing those people who are most important in their lives, person who's saved you, who's been there during your most difficult days. And very often, it's very when StoryCorps started, one of the kind of dirty secrets of StoryCorps was nobody actually wanted to come to the booth. They just thought it was – nobody knew what we were doing. It was this crazy idea. So we had open – our fill rate was like 15%, 10%. We had people who literally came – we had one woman who came 200 times because we had plenty of empty slots and interviewed everybody that she'd ever met. She'd meet someone on the subway and bring them to the booth, and that was fine with us. Now it's a very different situation. We can't nearly meet the demand for our services. And oftentimes when we open a booth in a city, we'll have a waiting list within a minute of hundreds, if not thousands, of people. So people are very careful about who they bring to the booth, and you only get one shot at it. So often they'll bring that person who's most important in their lives, and that's what this book is. And I'm going to play a bunch of stories from the book, and we actually are privileged and honored to have two people who are in the book who are with us who will read from their story. And I hope if you are interested in buying a book at the end, which I hope you do, all profits go to StoryCorps so we can serve more people in more places across the country, besides the fact that it's a great book, besides the fact that it makes a great gift. But please, even more important than getting me to sign it, I hope you'll have the participants who are here sign your book, because that's what these books are all about. So let me play a few stories, and I can also answer questions, and we can just talk about anything you guys want to talk about. This is, I think, the first story in the book. And it is, this is from Cody, Wyoming, and it's Susan McClinton and her husband, Philip McClinton. They came in to talk about their relationship. They had their first date 40 years ago, and it was a very unusual beginning. Philip was a bouncer in a topless bar, and Susan came in to enter a strip competition to help support her two kids as a single mom. And as you'll hear today, they are both biologists. So we'll get from point A to point B in this interview.
I came into the topless bar that you were bouncing, competed amateur night, because there was a prize at the end. And at the time, I had two children to support. So, I mean, I remember at one point you said, I'll keep an eye on you.
I thought, she didn't belong in here. She didn't need to be in this place.
And I think that was the beginning of our relationship. He said, I'm going to take you rattlesnake hunting. I thought you were absolutely out of your mind. But I had so much fun. I thought, hey, this is something I might want to do on a regular basis. And I remember at one point telling you that I had always enjoyed science in school. And you said, well, why don't we go back to school? And I said, you're crazy.
Neither one of us had anything but a ninth grade education. I tried 10th grade 3 times and I couldn't cut it. And we didn't think anyone would take us. And I said, call them and ask. And they accepted us on probation. We took all of our courses together.
You didn't know anything about school. And I recall several times when you told me you just didn't think you could make it anymore. And I would always tell you, I'll get you through it.
And we were both working on biology degrees.
Remember cell biology? I drew a diagram and taped it up in the bathroom on the mirror. So in the mornings, you have to look and learn it from there.
Without your help, I'd have never gotten through this because a lot of it I just plain didn't understand. But I think the thing I'm proudest of is that you finally did things that you never dreamed you could do, and you did them so well, you turned into a fine field biologist.
I guess I learned for the first time that I really was a person of worth. You know, after my life started out so bumpy, I never thought we'd get a college degree. And if you hadn't come into my life, I think I would have ended up in a very bad place.
Yeah.
It was a rescue romance, is what we called it, because we saved each other.
I'm going to take the liberty of playing just a fun piece for you guys. StoryCorps is kind of has gotten famous, especially in the last couple of months, for making people cry. If I had a penny for every time I heard about the mascara we would be a very, we'd have a huge endowment, the organization. And I think that, you know, most of the stories we broadcast actually aren't sad. But I think that what you hear when you hear a StoryCorps story is you hear people being authentic with each other. StoryCorps is sort of the opposite of reality TV. Nobody comes to StoryCorps to get rich. No one comes to get famous. It's an act of generosity and love. And many times you're hearing people, humanity kind of at its best, everyday people living life to their fullest. And I think when you hear those kind of stories, which you're going to be hearing a lot of tonight, you're kind of walking on a holy ground. And in a way, it's almost like when you hear a story like that, it's like an adrenaline shot right to the heart. It can be extremely emotional. But this is not an emotional story at all. This is a funny story. And I came from New York this morning, so I'm going to... Do we have any New Yorkers? Anybody from Queens? No Queens people. Okay, well, we're going to take you right to Queens. This is a few weeks ago when we celebrated our 10th anniversary on NPR. We revisited some of the stories we'd recorded over the last 10 years and caught up with people who had participated in StoryCorps. And so this is one of those. This is the first interview took place several years ago. This is Laura Greenberg interviewed by her daughter, Rebecca. Laura talking about growing up in Queens with a completely insane family. And then we're going to, there'll be a little musical break, and then we're going to hear an update on the family. So let's listen to Laura Greenberg talking about her her family in Queens.
My father would be in his boxer shorts in front of the stereo with a baton. He loved classical music. And he would play it really loud, and he would conduct the orchestra. And he's a little fat, bald man, and he'd get behind the wheel of a car, and he'd become like a Napoleon. He became nuts. He gave everybody the finger. He never used the brakes. And I remember being so frightened, I'd sit in the back on the floor crying, because I had said, we're going to die. The problem growing up in my home was that I didn't know what was normal. We're yelling, and we're pinching, and we're hugging, and we're cursing, and we peed with the door open. I mean, I didn't know this was not normal behavior. I didn't know people had secrets. You didn't tell your mother everything.
What did you learn?
Well, it's still hard.
Who were your old boyfriends? How many did you have?
I had a lot of boyfriends. I had the neighbor boy. My mother loved him, but he wore his pants really high, and he had an underbite. Ooh. But nobody wanted to have sex with me, really. I met your father. He was cute, but very, very quiet, and I scared the crap out of him. The first time he kissed me, he had a nosebleed all over his face. It was terrible. Still married 35 years later. Unbelievable.
Has your life been different than what you imagined?
Yeah, a little bit. I married a Jewish lawyer, and he makes no money. So I found success. And, you know, he's an indigent defense criminal lawyer. And he saves lives.
So last month, Carl came back in with his daughter and his wife to offer his rebuttal.
So we heard about how you bled all over Mom. Do you have any different take on that story?
That's how it happened. Well, I do have some Laura stories. We were having people over. She was going to make spaghetti, didn't have enough. So she broke the package of spaghetti in half. So she figured she had twice as much.
A pound is a pound.
We make a very odd couple.
He's from a New England family. And I remember we would sit at the dinner table at his house when we were dating, and no one would talk. And then I would start to giggle. I would get this, like, psychotic, hysterical laughter. So they already knew I was nuts. And I said, this is so refreshing. They don't ask about when I'm getting my period, or how much money I make, or did I make a duty today? You know, watching them was so intrusive.
Your mother was very happy with me.
Yeah.
She thought my name was Paul for many years.
She said, this is my son-in-law, Mark. And I'd say, Mom, his name's Carl. She'd say, son of a bitch, I can't remember his name.
It's so weird because our family now is the most functional of all of our friends. I mean, all my friends, they'd rather hang out at my house with my parents than hang out with me.
But Rebecca was the one who said she really wanted to do a StoryCorps interview. You know, when I listen on my way to work, I'm crying and my mascara's running and they're very tender, you know, heartfelt stories. And I said, they're not ever going to play ours. But we didn't do it for that. We just did it to have that experience and share that moment and have it forever.
So I have to say, I am the last 10 years of StoryCorps has been an incredible adventure, and I am proud that we have collected the largest, we have the largest collection of human voices ever gathered. But I will take to my grave with great pride the fact that in the 44, 45-year history of NPR, I believe that is the first time on Morning Edition or All Things Considered that the word duty was uttered.
Dave Isay, founder of StoryCorps. He spoke at the Elliott Bay Book Company on December 17th, 2013. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of his talk by going to kuow.org/speakersforum. You can also follow us on Twitter at @KUOWSpeakers. John O'Brien recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9, Seattle.
More from Dave Isay in a moment, 922, 94.9 KUOW. Tomorrow morning, a review of the week's news with news analyst Joni Balter, Knut Berger, the Mossback at crosscut.com, Eli Sanders, associate editor at The Stranger, and Luke Burbank, host of Livewire. Among the topics to be covered, what the state legislature might accomplish this year, Seattle's stalled tunnel drilling project, and Seahawks fever. It's all tomorrow morning at 10. Forecast for the Seattle area for tonight, lows 30s to lower 40s, cloudy skies, areas of fog, too. Friday highs in the 40s, cloudy skies, areas of fog in the morning, patchy fog in the afternoon. Support for KUOW comes from the Kent Arts Commission, presenting California Guitar Trio and Montreal Guitar Trio, performing original and new arrangements of progressive rock, world, jazz, and classical music. Friday, January 24th, 7:30 p.m. Information and tickets at kentarts.com.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. This is Speakers Forum. If there's one tradition that's never faded away in our history as people on this earth, it's storytelling. StoryCorps is a massive oral history project whose mission is to record, preserve, and share the stories of Americans from all backgrounds and beliefs. It was founded 10 years ago by radio documentary producer Dave Isay. Isay has compiled many of the stories into books. His most recent book is called Ties That Bind: Stories of Love and Gratitude from the First 10 Years of StoryCorps. He spoke at the Elliott Bay Book Company on December 17th, 2013.
Another story from the book. This is really this is kind of a foundational story for me. And in many ways, it's a centerpiece of Ties That Bind. We've launched a bunch of special initiatives over the years at StoryCorps where we'll focus on a particular group of folks whose stories we want to honor and collect. Our first one was with 9/11 families. Everyone who lost a loved one on September 11th comes to StoryCorps to leave a record of their lives. We have one now with post-9/11 military families who come to StoryCorps, vets, active duty, family members, Latino initiative, an initiative for people who have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. We launched the GRIO initiative. GRIO is a West African word for storytellers. 5 or 6 years ago, and it's now the largest collection of African-American stories ever gathered. But I was fortunate to go down to Atlanta at the Martin Luther King Center after the first month of GRIO and sit with about 100 families who had recorded and share their stories back, talk about their experience. One of the people there was a man named Lynn Weaver and his daughter Kimberly. And Lynn had come to StoryCorps GRIO in the first or second day after we opened to remember his father. His father was named Ted Weaver. Lynn grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee. And his father, Ted, was a janitor and a chauffeur in Knoxville. And Lynn wanted to tell his daughter about his dad.
My father was everything. And it's actually kind of difficult talking about it without becoming very emotional. Up until, you know, he died, every decision I made, I would always call him. And he would never tell me what to do, but he would always listen and say, well, what do you want to do? And he made me feel that I could do anything that I wanted to do. I can remember when we integrated the schools that there were many times when I was just scared. And I didn't think that I would survive. And I'd look up and he'd be there. And whenever I saw him, I knew that I was safe. I always tell you that your mom is the smartest person I've ever met. But I think my father ranks right up there as brilliant. When I was in high school, I was taking algebra, and I was sitting at the kitchen table trying to do my homework. And I got frustrated and said, I just can't figure this out. So my father said, what's the problem? He came by, he said, what's the problem? And I said, that's just algebra. He said, well, let me look at it. I said, Dad, they didn't have algebra in your day. And I went to sleep. And around 4 o'clock that morning, he woke me up. He said, come on, son, get up. He sent me at the kitchen table. And he taught me algebra. What he had done is sit up all night and read the algebra book. And then he explained the problems to me so I could do them and understand them. And to this day, I live my life trying to be half the man my father was. Just half the man. And I would be a success if my children loved me half as much as I love my father.
The day after that GRIO reception, I got an email from Lynn Weaver that said, Mr. Isay, you'll never know how honored and touched I was by the playing of the remembrance of my dad. After I got home, I realized that the evening of the StoryCorps GRIO reception was the anniversary of my father's death. Even in death, he continues to embrace me with his love. Signed, Lynn Weaver, Chairman of Surgery, Morehouse School of Medicine, in Atlanta, Georgia. And so to me, Ted Weaver, the janitor and chauffeur from Knoxville, that he is the great American hero. The Lynn Weaver, who's one of the most esteemed and accomplished surgeons in the country, Ted is the smartest, kindest, most decent man he's ever met. And he is the kind of person that we should be building statues to and holding up to our kids as examples of who they can and should become. In the book, Lynn Weaver tells a story about his dad. He talks in that tape about integrating the schools, and he remembers in Knoxville, the first year he integrated the school, he and his brother were on the football team. They were the only two African-Americans on the football team, and they had an away game and were playing, of course, an all-white team in the country outside of Knoxville. And at some point, he and his brother tackled the guy, and the guy was injured. And the there were stands on one side and a fence on the other side, and the stands got up and they started coming at these two brothers, and it was about to be a riot, and the two brothers backed up with the crowd coming at them, and they until they got to this fence and bumped up against this fence, and they saw this mass of people coming at them, and Lynn remembers that he turned around. And he looked through the fence, and there was his dad. There was Ted. And he turned back to his brother and tapped him on the shoulder. He said, Dad's here. We're safe. And they were. His dad never missed a football game. An important lesson from StoryCorps, never miss your children's athletic games. You hear that over and over and over again. But those are the stories that we tell at StoryCorps. This is about the poetry and the grace and the beauty and the kindness and these stories that are really hidden in plain sight all around us. I'm very, very pleased to have two people from Ties That Bind. And this is one of my favorites. I can't pick favorites, but this is really one of my favorite stories from the book. Don't tell anybody. This is from our Legacy project, and Legacy, our Legacy initiative. Legacy is an initiative where we work with people who are facing life-threatening illnesses, people who are in hospice or palliative care. We collaborate with hospices across the country to record interviews. And we worked with Bailey Boucher Hospice here in Seattle. Will you come up and say a couple of words about what we did with you? Come on. We haven't met before. Tell me your name again.
Sherry Johnson.
Are you a doctor or a...
Social worker.
Social worker.
Yeah.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, it's great to be here. So this was like
dream part of my job for me. I mean, I love my job anyway. Bailey Boucher, we serve people at end of life. We started out in 1992 as an organization that serves people with AIDS. To meet a niche here in Seattle for people to have been estranged from their families to have a place to go and die. And we've expanded over time as people have been living with AIDS and not just dying with AIDS. And we now serve people in our nursing home, people with AIDS, people who need palliative end-of-life care with cancer, ALS, Huntington's disease, MS, and other life-threatening illnesses. And we also have an outpatient program that serves 250 people living with HIV/AIDS, many of whom are living on the streets, and most of whom are facing drug addiction and or chronic mental illness in addition to HIV and other medical crises. So when StoryCorps contacted us about partnering with us for the Legacy Initiative, we were extremely excited, and I was lucky enough to be one of the 12 or so staff and volunteers who got to be involved in facilitating some of these conversations between people, and I think I did personally about 15, and it was so moving for me to sit with people and listen so up close and personal to some of the stories that got shared. I mean, some of these folks are people that I had worked with for many years, and I learned things about them in those 40-minute interviews that I had never heard, and saw such incredible tenderness between people. Sometimes, you know, I'd have two people who'd been living on the streets for years who agreed to come do an interview with each other and who I'd never heard say a kind word to each other. And they got together in front with these microphones in this little room for 40 minutes and started reciting poetry to each other or telling each other about when they first fell in love or what they were scared about when they were diagnosed with HIV and cried together and told each other what they loved about each other. And it was so moving to me that to learn even more than I do every day in my work how big family is. So thank you
so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Did you facilitate Barbara and Tim's conversation?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I want to say that we're going to have Barbara Schuyler and Tim Owens read from the book. But, you know, as you were speaking, I think that there's that StoryCorps in some ways and I don't know if you'll agree with me. I hope you will. That in some ways there's the hospice work and StoryCorps have some similarities. I mean, I feel like I know that there's this tradition in hospice where there are five things that you want to say to someone before they die, which is thank you, I love you, forgive me, I forgive you, and finally goodbye. And in a way, I feel like what happens in the StoryCorps booth is you have an opportunity to have that kind of closure with a loved one. We're all dying. That's not, you know, that's something none of us can avoid, but not actively dying at that moment. So I feel a great kinship. And we also, I know that something that I talk about with my staff often, who sit and listen to often, you know, very, very difficult interviews. You know, we talk a lot about how it's not about, I've heard this from other people who work in hospices. I say to my staff and we say to each other, it's not about us, it's about the people that we're serving. We're going to hear two excerpts from this really remarkable interview from the Legacy Project, recorded here in Seattle at Bailey Boucher. Tim Owens and Barbara Schuyler are here. Tim we're going to read two sections from the book. One is going to be Tim reading by himself, and then with Barbara, and I'll kind of tell the story in between. Tim was born in El Paso and had a very rough childhood. This is a section of the book where Tim talks about being sent home from school with a note saying that he hadn't learned his multiplication tables. So we're going to bring a microphone to you before you start. Okay, great. So you want to hold that, or I can hold it?
Okay. I'm really sorry, everybody.
No.
It works beautifully. I've tested it before. But that doesn't help us now.
First of all, Dave, thank you for letting me be here and participate in this program. It was amazing. My mother read the note. She kept me home from school the next day and informed me that I would learn to multiply from 1 to 9 before my father got home, or she would personally teach me. I spent the day frantically trying to learn. My mother called me into the kitchen, made me remove my clothing, and screamed, "What are 6/8? I was unable to answer. So she took my father's heavy black leather gun belt, and she said, "Timothy, I'm going to teach you what 6 times 8 is. I'm going to hit you, and when I stop, you count, and you'll know what 6 times 8 is." I was barely conscious by 48. I knew eventually one of us was going to die and it was not going to be her. So I ran away from home when I was 15. I spent the next 5 years on the street, living from empty restroom to empty restroom, getting into men's cars, going home with them and having sex just to have a place to sleep. Statistically, I shouldn't even be here. I should be on the back of a milk carton, are buried in a shallow grave.
The story goes on. And again, this is the stories of just resilience and courage are breathtaking, just breathtaking. Tim goes on in the story to get a job as an assistant in a nursing home. And one of the families who he cared for, one of the patients he cared for, thought so highly of him that when he died, he left his money. He instructed his wife to send Tim to nursing school through his will, and Tim became a nurse. And one of the people he cared for was a quadriplegic college professor in Louisville, Kentucky. His wife's name is Barbara Schuyler, and while he was taking care of Barbara's husband, Tim got sick with AIDS. So Tim and Barbara, will you read what happens next? And this will be the end of the story.
When I have AIDS, and so I had a test, and sure enough, I came home, and I remember you all crying. When you all were retired to Seattle, you said, "We're not going to leave you alone to do this. We're going to help you. You're coming with us." And so I came to Seattle, where you spoon-fed me 6 times a day and watched over me constantly. I think of the times that I worked hard to make sure that a patient was comfortable and well taken care of, and now it's completely reversed, and you're here for me.
Well, you were there for us at the end of Bill's life. I asked the doctor to wait until you got there that morning to explain Bill's condition. And I was really grateful and happy that you were there at that moment when I was making one of the most difficult decisions I ever made.
You have become my family and my world, and I have gotten so much from you, so much more from you than I ever gave. Y'all have taught me how to love art, how to love books, how to love music and good food, and how to live. I don't survive anymore. It is all because I came to you one day for an interview as a nurse. I never knew what I was going to walk away with. The hard way that I was treated as a child and living on the streets trying to survive has all been washed away. I have a family. I have your husband, my father, Bill. I have you, Barbara, my mother. Not many people get to choose their family, but I have had been fortunate enough to be able to choose mine.
Dave Isay, founder of StoryCorps. He spoke at the Elliott Bay Book Company on December 17th, 2013. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of his talk by going to kuow.org/speakersforum. You can also follow us on Twitter at KUOW Speakers. John O'Brien recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9 Seattle.
More from Dave Isay in a moment, 941 94.9 KUOW. Michelle Norris is a former host of NPR's All Things Considered. Lately, she's been working on an NPR initiative called the Race Card Project, which is an effort to foster a wider conversation about race. Before joining NPR in 2002, Norris spent almost 10 years as a reporter for ABC News in the Washington, D.C. Bureau. She's also worked as a staff writer for the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, and the Los Angeles Times. We'll talk with Michelle Norris tomorrow at noon. Forecast for tonight for the Seattle area, lows 30s to lower 40s, cloudy skies, areas of fog, just to make things interesting. Friday highs in the 40s, cloudy skies, areas of fog in the morning, patchy fog in the afternoon. Composer and arranger Johnny Mandel, responsible for film and television classics like Suicide is Painless from MASH and The Shadow of Your Smile from The Sandpiper, talks about his long career in music, beginning in a few minutes at 10 o'clock. Support for KUOW comes from Academy for Precision Learning, a K-12 school where students across the autism spectrum learn side-by-side with their typically developing peers. High school open house January 22nd at 7 p.m. More at aplschool.org.
KUOW and the Nordic Heritage Museum present the Nordic Lights Film Festival, featuring contemporary films, documentaries, and shorts from Denmark, Finland, Iceland, Norway, Sweden, and this year, Greenland, January 17th through the 19th at SIFF Cinemas Film Center. Learn more on the events page at kuow.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. This is Speakers Forum. Dave Isay is the founder of StoryCorps, a national oral history project. StoryCorps recently celebrated its 10th anniversary. Isay spoke at the Elliott Bay Book Company on December 17, 2013. Next, he talks about how some of the best stories are hidden in plain sight and told by seemingly ordinary people.
We're distracted by so much nonsense and, so much kind of meaningless stories and the kind of celebrity crap and all this. And if we just took the time to listen, to ask these questions, I think that we'll hear these stories that remind us why we get up in the morning and what life is all about and what's important in life and really focus us and help us be thankful for every day that we have. I'll play one more radio story, and I know we're running a little bit late, and I could keep you here all night, which I'm not going to do. This is another story from the book. And you know what? Do you have any questions about StoryCorps before I play this? Yes.
My name is Peggy.
Hi, Peggy.
And I have a brain injury. And
yes.
And when I was recovering, doing cognitive rehab therapy, they were playing, having me listen to recorded things.
Yeah.
So one of the appeals of StoryCorps to me is the fact that I am hearing people not only tell their story, but tell it in their own voice, the tone of their voice,
yeah,
the tenor and everything. I love the books.
Thank you.
But I so much would prefer to have the CD of the book with the people speaking. I know the CDs you have are abridged, but is there some way we could ever have the whole book on tape?
Well, we do have a book that we have a CD that goes along with the book. And I have to say, I mean, I've been an audio person forever. I love the sound of the human voice, and I think these stories are so powerful. I'm going to go off of my order and play a story for you about memory loss.
And I bought your CD, but I just
Yeah. Well, you can, you know, we're a public service. So all of our, every single, we have 500 stories that we've done, 500 weeks in a row on NPR. And we, you can listen to every single one of them on our website. So it's all publicly accessible, and we invite you to do that. But I do, I think, you know, the radio is ephemeral. I love the voice, and the soul is contained in the voice. But I also, I think there's something really extraordinary about these books as well, because the radio pieces are short. The books allow you to get into to more detail. Again, you know, in the same way that you've got the poetry and the words on the radio, we distill, I think, the poetry and the words themselves. And when we do these books, we actually throw away the audio. We don't think about it. And we do transcripts of hundreds, sometimes thousands of stories with the voices out of our head and just edit them for text. And another thing that people debate often are these – who here has seen our animations? Couple people. So some people hate our animations, but I like them, and I'm the boss, so we're making animations. This is a story from our book as well, and this is about memory loss, and it's about a woman who had a tumor taken out of her brain and lost her short-term memory. And I've had the opportunity to meet these folks numerous times on my book tour. They've come to many readings. Her name is Guinevere Mann. Her husband, her boyfriend, they're about to get married, is Yasir Salem. And it's interesting because one of the uses of StoryCorps that I'd never thought of was when I first met Guinevere, she said that she's listened to the interview she did with Yasir 10,000 times because it helped ground her and remind her who she is. Yasir says she listens to it multiple times every day. But this is part of the interview that they did together. And again, is also in the book, and this is about trauma to the brain.
Write down when I eat meals, because sometimes I might eat lunch three times because I don't remember that I ate already. The doctors say the brain can continue healing up to 2 years, but whatever is not back by that point is not likely to ever come back.
So you had your surgery in November 2008, right?
Right. And so I'm going to have to live the rest of my life this way. And the thing that scares me the most is like the thought that I will wake up one day and I'll be 80 years old and I won't remember the last 40 years of my life.
Do you remember when you first came out of surgery?
I know that I used to always think that I was in San Francisco.
What are those things called? Do you remember?
Confabulations?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember another confabulation that I used to have?
You used to think that your coworker Barbara was your mom.
That's
right. She's a completely different race than you.
That's funny, yeah.
There was one point where you were confused because you thought we had broken up. And I would ask you, like, why do you think you're staying at my place? She's like, well, we're just cool like that.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's
all right. After all you've been doing for me.
Thankfully you got over that.
I'm thankful for that as well.
So is there any positive things that have come out of losing your memory?
Well, I ran the New York City Marathon with you, my boyfriend, and one of the things that I asked you was to help me as a trick to not let me look at any of the mile markers along the way. And if I ask you how long you've been running, to always tell me 10 or 15 minutes. It really worked like a charm. When we got to the end, you and I were running across the finish line, and as if on cue, I started crying my eyes out, so happy. You know, I have spent a lot of days since my injury comparing myself to what I used to be and feeling sad about the things that I've lost, but doing the marathon shows me that I still have a lot left in me.
Another story from the book. This is one of the kind of extraordinary Just like that, the Yasser Salaman and Guinevere Mann interview we just heard, and the use of StoryCorps to help ground herself in her history and her memory. This is a use of StoryCorps kind of in the realm of truth and reconciliation. Also from the book, Oshay Israel, when he was 16 years old, was a gang member, and Mary Johnson's son, whose name was Lorenium Bird, was also a gang member. They got in a fight, and Oshay shot and murdered Mary Johnson's son. About 12 years into Oshay's prison sentence, Mary went to the penitentiary to meet the man who had murdered her son, and then she went back again and again, and by the time he was released, they had gotten to the point in their friendship where he moved in next door to her. About a year after he got out of the penitentiary, Mary and Oshay came to StoryCorps to tell their story.
You and I met at Stillwater Prison. I wanted to know if you were in the same mindset of what I remember from court, where I wanted to go over and hurt you. But you were not that 16-year-old. You were a grown man. I shared with you about my son.
And he became human to me. You know, when I met you, it was like, okay, now it's real. And then when it was time to go, you broke down and started shedding tears. And the initial thing to do was just try to hold you up as best I can. Just hug you like I would my own mother, you know.
After you left the room, I began to say, I just hugged the man that murdered my son. And I instantly knew that all that anger and animosity, all the stuff I had in my heart for 12 years for you, I knew it was over, that I had totally forgiven you.
As far as receiving forgiveness from you, sometimes I still don't know how to take it because I haven't totally forgiven myself yet. It's something that I'm learning from you. I won't say that I have learned yet because it's still a process that I'm going through.
I treat you as I would treat my son, and our relationship is beyond belief. We live next door to one another.
Yeah, so you can see what I'm doing. You know, firsthand. We actually bump into each other all the time, leaving in and out of the house. And, you know, our conversations, they come from, boy, how come you ain't called over here to check on me in a couple days? You ain't even asking if I need my garbage to go out. I find those things funny because it's a relationship with a mother for real.
Well, my natural son is no longer here. I didn't see him graduate. Now you're going to college. I'll have an opportunity to see you graduate. I didn't see him getting married. Hopefully one day I'll be able to experience that with you.
Just to hear you say those things and be in my life in the manner in which you are, it's my motivation. It motivates me to make sure that I stay on the right path. You still believe in me. And the fact that you can do it despite how much pain I caused you, it's amazing.
I know it's not an easy thing, you know, to be able to share our story together, even with us sitting here looking at each other right now. I know it's not an easy thing. So I admire that you can do this.
I love you, lady.
I love you too, son.
Another question or two? Yes. Do we have plans to do a Native American initiative? Yes, we hope to at some point. Our next big initiative, which we're going to launch in June, is an LGBT initiative. And at some point in the next 5 years, we hope to do a Native American initiative as well. Well, I am over time. Oh, one more question. Yes.
You always say that the stories are cataloged in the Library of Congress.
Yes.
How do you access? So, do you go there or is it online?
So the question is, how do we access the stories? So we have, they are all at the Library of Congress, at the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. And now you do have to go to the library in order to find your story. And of course, the hundreds of edited stories you can find on StoryCorps.org. We, over the next several years, are going to make the archive public through StoryCorps. We have some work to do. When you come to StoryCorps, you sign a release or you don't sign a release at the end of the interview. We don't care if you sign a release. If you sign a release, it goes to the Library of Congress and we can broadcast it. If you don't sign a release, you walk away with both of the CDs, and there's no record. We erase your name. There's no record you ever came to StoryCorps. Hopefully you had a meaningful, and I think it's a tribute to the facilitators that every one of these 50,000 interviews has been successful and been a meaningful experience in people's lives. A tribute also to the participants. When StoryCorps started, I thought we'd see a compliance rate of about 60, 70, maybe 80% on signing the release, because obviously what happens in the interviews is so intimate. And 50,000 interviews later, it's about 99.8% of people who sign the release. So, but we still, as Barbara and Tim will tell you, we don't, even though we have the rights to do with these stories, to put them on the radio, put them in books, we always contact participants, make sure that we have their full informed consent, that they want it to be published, be on the radio. If not, we don't do it. And we have to go through the same process to figure out how to make this archive public, to make sure that we don't do, that people have full informed consent about what it means to have that full 40-minute interview online. So over the next couple of years, we're going to take a series of slow steps to begin to make the archive public and let people turn on or not turn on their interviews to a wider public. And then most of the archive will be public. And I have no idea what kind of a compliance rate we'll see. I think it'll be much lower than 99.9%.
Dave Isay, founder of StoryCorps. He spoke at the Elliott Bay Book Company on December 17th, 2013. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of his talk by going to kuow.org/speakersforum. You can also follow us on Twitter at KUOW Speakers. John O'Brien recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9 Seattle.
It's estimated only 2 in 5 Americans have a will, and less than 5% of all wills contain a charitable provision. Planning your legacy gift to KUOW is easy and can ensure public radio remains available for generations to come. For more information on how you can make a planned gift, go to kuow.org/future.
9:58 and change. KUOW FM Seattle, KUOW Tumwater, KQOW Bellingham, and Digital HD Services. I'm Bill O'Grady. Earlier this week, the head of the Boeing Machinists Union, Tom Robleski, announced he was leaving the position. In a statement, he said the stress of recent negotiations with the Boeing company changed his perspective on work-life balance. He also said one's job shouldn't destroy one's health. How much stress is too much to the point where you're putting your health at risk? Dr. David Posen is an MD and the author of Is Work Killing You? A Doctor's Prescription for Treating Workplace Stress. We'll talk with him tomorrow afternoon at 1. Weather forecast for the Seattle area for tonight, lows 30s to lower 40s, cloudy skies and areas of fog. Friday highs in the 40s, cloudy, areas of fog in the morning, patchy fog in the afternoon.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.